From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth? You should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the tropical and beautiful Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, sitting.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 14th of April, 2014.
You have an incoming transmission.
The revolution will not be televised.
The voice of news information. This is Radio First Turner.
The purpose of this program is to bring vital news, information, and...
And I'm your host, Mark Skogman.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
He is the most interesting man in the world.
You're so ugly, you could be a modern art masterpiece.
Okay. I had some new files for the beginning of the program, and I'm enjoying them. I hope you're enjoying them as much as I enjoyed producing them and hearing them for the first time on the air here myself. I was actually having a lot of fun doing that, so that's pretty cool. All right. Well, on this program, we have two focuses, and the focus is going to be, actually, there's going to be two focuses. And what they are going
Let
to be is, number one, it's going to be political, and we're going to speak about the effort to reform the juvenile justice system so that it is more fair and smarter and better run for juveniles. And the second focus is going to be the environment as it relates to renewable energy and also as it relates to transportation issues. Those are the two focuses for this program. And on this program, segment one, we are going to have a interview with Wengay Newton. We're awaiting him calling in right now. We should have him shortly. We're going to speak with him regarding the trip that we all made. I accompanied Wengay Newton and a number of people, about 32 people, on a trip to Tallahassee to the state legislature while it was in session. And it was an interfaith coalition that is working for juvenile justice reform.
And that's going to be very cool, very fun. That's going to be a great thing that's happening. We're going to speak with him shortly. And also, what's happening now is also we're going to speak with Bob Lasher. Bob Lasher is the External Affairs Director for the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. He's going to be live in the studio here with us. And that's going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about Green Light Pinellas. That's going to be the second major segment in the second half of the program. Also, we've got time. We're going to also broadcast a speech by Jenna Garland, who, let me tell you who Jenna is. She's a member of the Sierra Club, and she's the Deputy Press Secretary for the Beyond Coal campaign. I did an interview with her on Wednesday, 2 April 2014, after a rally where 6,000 signatures on petitions were delivered to Duke Energy in downtown St. Petersburg, advocating that Duke Energy start developing renewable energy resources to provide electricity for their customers. And also, if we have time, we're going to preview the film Inequality for All. I've seen the film, and it is now available on DVD. I wanted to remind people about it. We'll have the preview of the film Inequality for All, and we'll talk about that as well. So there's a number of things happening here. And I'm going to go to one segment here, and then we're going to try to get to City Councilman for District 7 in St. Petersburg, Wenge Newton, on the phone so he can speak with us. So here's a couple of things to listen to while we do that, and this is going to be pretty interesting, I think. Listen to this. This is Stevie Wonder's take on juvenile justice issues and criminal justice issues in general. In 1973, in August, this is from the Intervisions album. This is a segment of Living for the City by Stevie Wonder.
Jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on, get in that cell.
His hair is long, his feet are hard and twisted. He spends his life walking the streets of New York City. He's almost dead from breathing in air pollution. He tried to fight, but to him there's no solution.
Okay, we're still trying to get Wenge Newton, City Councilman of District 7 from St. Petersburg, on the line. We're having some technical difficulties. We'll resolve those as we go. And I'm going to play for you some audio from the video that I shot when I was in Tallahassee last week on Tuesday, which was the 8th of April, 2014. We were in Tallahassee at the state capitol, and the Interfaith Coalition was visiting lawmakers, and we visited the Senate President, the Speaker of the House, Representative Darrell Wusson, and Representative Dwight Dudley. And this is the City Councilman, along with the young people that were in this group, addressing Representative Dwight Dudley from Pinellas County. And this is some audio of that meeting. Rather interesting. You hear City Councilman Wenge Newton coaching the young people as to how to speak to a legislator, and they actually did very well. They're very passionate, very, very wonderful young people. And this is what they sounded like as they were speaking with State Representative Dwight Dudley.
Separate Interfaith Coalition, and we originally heard that you all were reforming the juvenile justice
Champagne, dude. This is y'all. Right. We done a lot. Y'all step up.
So we have been well informed about the reform of the bill, but we also seen that there were a few things that were left out that we would like to let you know about.
We just want to,
bring your attention.
Bring to your attention arresting our youth.
This is your kids
do.
Juvenile stuff.
Science Project, we do that. Playing in the halls, we do that. On our phones, we do that. Fighting, we get out of hand at times, but that's what you expect out of kids. But taking them to jail and sentencing for adult crimes, that's
sure.
We feel like that's injustice to us as you, because we feel like that you guys are. And I'm not talking about you, but yes, you guys.
I get it. Sure.
You guys are doing all the arresting. I get it. I know what you're saying.
Putting us, and throwing us under the bus and labeling us as adults, and when we get out or when we being released, we're labeled as troublemakers. We're labeled as failing.
You're stigmatized, ostracized, and then it makes it harder to get a job, harder to be better educated, harder to make it in our society. And why should that happen when it's trivial offenses that many young people engage in? That is really not highly consequential or dangerous to others if it's just the kind of youthful mistakes that are made. Let's be honest about it. If we make mistakes, let's admit we're making mistakes.
Right.
But we don't necessarily have to be so punitive and stigmatize and ostracize people when they are just doing what that everybody engages in at some point. Why do we need to be so rigid and punitive in our response? I think that surely it's appropriate to say that's wrong, and surely it's okay to maybe write a ticket. Let's do something that's we got to maybe, are we looking at the profit motive? Is there some motivation to try to arrest the most people we can, to spend the greatest resources that we can? And that's a concern, obviously. I think so.
What are some of the solutions that we can think of? Churches,
right?
Youth programs,
YMCA.
So less incarceration.
Sure, absolutely. Getting more involved in the community, getting a greater tie to the community, and realizing that we as good community members want to be sensitive to our neighbors, that we want to do the right thing. We don't want to be at odds or be separated from our neighbors. We want to be good neighbors, so we all want to learn to improve our behavior and to do good things, but we don't need to be smashed over the head. We don't need to have our rights taken away. We don't need to be ostracized and criminalized and stigmatized to do all that. So, I agree with you, absolutely.
Representative Dell is one of the ones. He's a champion for the juveniles. He always has been. He's from, his uncle serves on the city council with me. So you're looking at homegrown, and it's nice to have friends here.
I'm a criminal defense lawyer.
That's
so
right.
That's the first time that's ever happened. And I'll tell you, more important than anything, I have three kids. I have a 15, 17.
Yes, that was State Representative Dwight Dudley meeting with the Interfaith Coalition when they went up to Tallahassee to the state capitol last week on Tuesday, April 8th, and they lobbied for juvenile justice reform. Very eloquent. Wenge Newton was a great coach for the young people that went, and they spoke on their own behalf and the behalf of their peers very eloquently to the state Senate president, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Representative Daryl Roussan, and you heard there State Representative Dwight Dudley from District 67. So that was great. I was very impressed with the trip. It left from the Bible-based Fellowship Church in Tampa, and we went to Tallahassee and back in a big tour bus all in one day, and it was a great trip, great people. I was very impressed, and we're going to have a video of that trip online as early as tomorrow, so that you'll be able to see the trip for yourself and a lot of still photographs as well. So that was a great trip. I'm very happy, that I did that, and it was wonderful to spend the time with City Councilman Wengay Newton as well. He's a great mentor to the children, and he had a lot to say about juvenile justice. He's been very passionate on this issue for a number of years, and I just have one thing to say. Yes, there we go. A little bit of humorous music for City Councilman Wengay Newton. We were not able to get him on the phone tonight, but we'll hopefully book him for an interview for next week's program. Something must have happened because I know he's a city councilman and a great guy, and if he had been able to call in, he would have. So there must have been some type of emergency. So on to the next segment. Segment two is an interview with Jenna Garland. Again, Jenna Garland is the she's the deputy director, or deputy press secretary, rather, of the Beyond Coal campaign with the Sierra Club. And this is a an interview that I conducted with her on Wednesday, the 2nd of April, 2014. This was in St. Petersburg in Williams Park, right across from the Duke Energy headquarters. And this is right after a rally where there was about 150 people there, and there were 6,000 petitions delivered to Duke Energy to start developing their renewable energy resources and start phasing out the non-renewable energy resources that they rely on right now. It was quite an event, 6,000 petitions, and they were done in a huge scroll, and there were sections of it that were brought across the street and then delivered to Duke Energy employees right there at the headquarters. So quite a spectacular demonstration. And this is what Jenna Garland had to say after that demonstration about the issues that the rally and demonstration was about. Mark Skogman with Spectrum 360. I'm here in Williams Park across the street from the Duke Energy headquarters, and I'm with Jenna Garland with the Sierra Club. Jenna, what happened here today? What was this event about, and how did it go?
Thanks, Mark. Well, more than 140 people turned out today because the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition has collected nearly 6,000 petitions from people living right here in the Tampa Bay-St. Pete area. Wow. And all of those people who signed their names are asking Duke Energy to move beyond coal and choose clean energy like solar and energy efficiency instead.
Excellent. So there are more than 140 people here? Very good. And were there petitions that were delivered to the Duke Energy headquarters?
Yes. So we put all the petitions out on a huge banner. It measured more than 300 feet long. And we marched that banner in pieces across the street over to Duke headquarters. And one of their staff people came out and took the petitions. And we think that's a really strong showing of the support in this community for clean energy solutions like solar power and like energy efficiency.
Very good. So all 6,000 petitions were delivered to the Duke Energy headquarters, is that correct?
Yes, so we delivered 6,000 petitions to Duke Energy headquarters today. All of those people from right here, they're probably Duke Energy ratepayers, and we want to demonstrate to them that there's real support for this. There's real political support for solar energy in the Sunshine State.
Now, what's the next step after this rally? What are you going to do next in terms of furthering the progress on these issues?
Well, the Sierra Club is working right now at the Public Service Commission to push Duke Energy to up its energy savings goals, and that's going to save homeowners and business owners like us money on their energy bills every month. And we're also going to be pushing with state leaders, elected officials, as well as Duke Energy's staff people and their executives to stop stalling, get rid of that Crystal River coal plant, and really invest in solar power and energy efficiency for Florida.
Now, what do you think the future is for nuclear energy in the state of Florida, and also coal and natural gas as opposed to the renewables?
Right. We know that solar power and energy efficiency are the cheapest. They're so much faster to build up in the state and to start powering our homes and businesses. The easiest kilowatt of power is the kilowatt of power you never use. And energy savings helps get us that. It's the fastest and the cheapest way. And coal and natural gas are exactly the same. It means Floridians sending their energy dollars out of state to import dirty fuels that we don't have here. But we have all the solar power here in Florida, one of the nation's leaders for solar power potential. And it's time that Duke Energy and the other utilities in the state start to take advantage of that so that real Floridians can see those benefits. Clean air, clean water, lower energy bills, more jobs right here.
Jenna Garland with the Sierra Club. Thank you for speaking with Spectrum 360. Wow. Well, that was great. Jenna Garland is a good interview. I enjoy speaking with her on occasion. And there were a lot of people in the park that day, and they were all very enthusiastic for clean energy resources. And we're going to be speaking in the second half of the program with Bob Lasher, who's the External Affairs Officer for, Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. And we'll be speaking about Greenlight Pinellas. That'll be in just a few minutes here. I also want to just focus on the film Inequality for All for just a moment. Now, Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, also worked for previous administrations, and as he jokingly says sometimes, he was also an aide to President Abraham Lincoln, dating himself, of course. He does that in the film to good effect with the students at Berkeley where he teaches. And the film Inequality for All, it's a great film. It's really got a lot to say about inequality in America, and it really documents it well. And he documents even better why this is bad for our country. Now, I saw the film last year in October when it opened in theaters down at the Burns Court Cinema in Sarasota, which is the nearest theater that I could see it in this area. And it was excellent. And now it's out on DVD, and I want to just play the audio of the film preview to remind folks that Inequality for All is out there, and that it's available, and that you should watch it. That's what you should do with that film, is watch it. And watch it carefully, and take note of all the interesting information that's in that film, because it's very good, and I highly recommend it. So you can get it on DVD now, and just a few weeks ago, there were events that were organized in March, and there was, I believe, approximately 300 house parties where people gathered at people's homes and watched the film all across the country. And then there was a conference call with Robert Reich himself after the screenings of the film. So there's been a lot of activity with this, and it's a great film. I highly recommend it, and I would like to play for you now the audio of that preview.
Now, the thing you ought to know about this Mini Cooper is it is small.
We are in proportion, me and my car.
My name is Robert Reich. I was Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton. Before that, the Carter administration. Before that, I was a special aide to Abraham Lincoln.
Of all developed nations, the United States has the most unequal distribution of income, and we're surging toward even greater inequality. 1928 and 2007 become the peak years for income concentration. It looks like a suspension bridge.
Last year, we made $36,000.
I probably make $50,000 a year, working 70 hours a week.
The middle class is struggling.
Now, people occasionally say to me, what nation does it better? The answer is the United States. In the decades after World War II, the economy boomed, but you had very low inequality.
Do you know Robert Reich?
I do indeed.
He's a communist.
When I was a kid, bigger boys would pick on me. I think it changed my life. I had to protect people from the people who would beat them up economically. Who is actually looking out for the American worker? The answer is nobody.
Workers don't have power if they don't have a voice. Their wages and benefits start eroding. We are losing equal opportunity in America. Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
Yes, that's a great Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary in the Clinton administration, and the great film Inequality for All. And I highly recommend it. That's why I played that. And you'll notice that there's a couple of brief segments in the preview that I actually used in the introduction to this program, where he says, you know, those are you that are feeling cynical. Just look where we have been. And he says it exactly like that. We actually use that to open up the program. That's one of the files we use. So, great film. I highly recommend it. And we're going to have more segments for you after the break. We've got a couple minutes to talk about a couple of things here. First of all, remember, go to www.tantalk1340.com and go to podcasts and go to Spectrum 360 to listen to the podcast of this program. There's 33 Spectrum 360 programs posted there for you all the way back to when this program started last year on Monday, the 2nd of September. They're all there. Lots of great content. And I want to point this out to our regular listeners that we have a lot of exclusives on this program. I go where a lot of other media people do not go and give you the stories that are underreported or sometimes not reported at all. So there's a lot of content like that scattered throughout every Spectrum 360 program for the last 33 programs that we've done. So I want to recommend that to you. Go back to the past programs. There's a lot of content that you'll find nowhere else. Also, go to www.facebook.com and search for the Spectrum 360 radio program. Click on the like button. We love those likes, so give us more. Okay? That's basically all I have to say on that subject. Now, I want you to know that we're going to have Bob Lasher on the second half of the program here. He's the External Affairs Officer for the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. And we're going to be speaking about Greenlight Pinellas. You can go to greenlightpinellas.com for more information about that. I've been attending the PSTA hearings for about 2 years now regarding this subject and others. And it's been interesting to see what's happened on this issue and how it's developed over time. So we've got a lot to talk about regarding that. I've been wanting to cover this more extensively for a number of weeks, and now I get the opportunity tonight to do that very thing. And so I thank Brad Miller and Bob Lasher for being willing to come on this program in the late evening and talk about Greenlight Pinellas and all things PSTA. So we're going to have a great conversation there. And on next week's program, we hope to reschedule City Councilman from District 7 in St. Petersburg, Wengay Newton, for the segment that we were not able to air tonight. And then also, we'll be doing more environmental coverage. There have been major developments, as people who listen to this program regularly know, about the developments in the issue of fracking and injection wells in the Naples area at the state level and also the federal level. We're going to have further interviews on that. And I hope to have Karen Dwyer on the program next week. She's been one of the main activists that's been active down in Naples, Florida. So more Spectrum 360 after the break. Stay tuned for network news and commercials. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more Spectrum 360.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. Both drivers in last week's Northern California crash involving a FedEx truck and a bus full of students had clean driving records. The crash killed 10 people, including the drivers. The Sacramento Bee notes state records as showing neither driver had a moving violation. Blood tests are being performed. The drivers' medical histories are also being examined. There is enough evidence to warrant a hate crimes prosecution. The announcement comes from investigators of the shootings that killed 3 people at 2 Jewish centers in Kansas. Michael Cade of the Kansas City FBI Division.
Yesterday's attack at the Jewish Community Center in the Village Shalom strikes at the core fundamental freedoms of how our country was founded and what we live by every single day. And we've now determined that the motivation behind this was a hate crime.
The shooter is a member of the KKK going back for decades. Stocks gained ground on Wall Street. The Dow rose 146 points and the Nasdaq added 22. This is NBC News Radio.
Buying a car can be a stressful experience. Well, TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. TrueCar.com helps car buyers get rid of the fear that you might overpay. Last month, nearly 45,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of $3,046 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these 3 easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Second, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. And the third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com. Visit today.
The Buddy Verdi Show is always discovering new talent, like Monday Night Football commentator John Gruden's 17-year-old son, Michael.
Your son's going to compose a new Monday Night Football theme? Is that true?
He's going to try. That's why we sent him down there to meet Buddy. Maybe Buddy can point him in the right direction, get us some good advice. This is John Gruden of Monday Night Football and my son, Michael, and we're listening to The Buddy Verdi Show, and we love it.
That's The Buddy Verdi Show, Saturday afternoon from 1 until 3, here on Tantalk.
We're talking to Donato. He's the owner and operator of Cafe Milano, an authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant. What do you mean when you say you have authentic Italian food?
Authentic because I learned all the simplicity, the authenticity of simple but powerful flavor. And it's authentic because we use only the ingredient imported from Italy. We are opening 11 o'clock in the morning till 11 at night, Monday till Saturday, and Sunday we open 12 till 10 o'clock at night.
And you have beer and wine.
Beer and wine, beautiful imported Italian beer, Peroni, white wine, Pinot Grigio, Chardonnay, or the traditional red, which are the Merlot, Montepulciano, Chianti, and Pinot Noir.
I can't recommend it highly enough. It's Cafe Milano, located at 105 North Fort Harrison in Clearwater, Florida. Phone number 305-519-6910. Mention Tantalk Radio Network and get free ice cream. Thank you, Donato.
Grazie.
Here is a special announcement from Jewelry Buyers International.
We buy gold, diamonds, silver coins, platinum, military items, estate jewelry, watches, sterling silver, old paper money, high school rings, and more. Everyone claims to pay higher, but Jewelry Buyers International actually does pay higher. Licensed for over 30 years, A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, and a member of Angie's List. Conveniently located for 10 years at 5316 U.S. Highway 19, Newport Richey, in the Quality Inn and Suites. And best of all, Jewelry Buyers International now makes house calls in East Pasco, Zephyr Hills, Dade City, Wesley Chapel, and the greater Tampa Bay area. Open Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. On the web at jewelrybuyersinternational.net. For an appointment, call 813-763-1633. That's 813-763-1633.
Jewelry Buyers International.
813-763-1633.
Discover the magic of Bock Tower Gardens with family fun for everyone. The National Historic Landmark in Lake Wales is one of America's finest gardens, centrally located in rolling hills of citrus. Experience nature and romance as you enjoy the Singing Tower carillon bells ringing every half hour. Travel back in time as you tour the 1930s Mediterranean-style Pinewood Estate. Bring your family to create memories to last a lifetime. Open every day with free parking. Plan your visit at bocktowergardens.org.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 14th of April, 2014. I'm your host, Mark Skogman, and we're going to get right to the final segment here on this week's edition. I'm here with Bob Lasher. He's the External Affairs Officer of the Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. And to get things started off here, I've got a little bit of transportation-themed music here for us.
Hurt more, much more than cars and girls. Just look at us now.
Okay, that's the transportation theme music for tonight. Thought I'd have a little bit of fun. You know, we do that in this program. We use music and old movie clips, all kinds of stuff to have a little fun with the program, because we talk about so many serious issues on this program, and I like to mix it up a little bit and make it a little bit lighter for people. So Bob Lasher, External Affairs with Affairs Officer with PSTA, say hello to the Spectrum 360 listening audience.
Hey there, everyone. Good to be here tonight.
And let's get right to it. I'd like to start with the most basic questions, because, you know, a lot of people don't even know what Greenlight Pinellas is yet. And even though I've been following it, I've had a lot of questions about a lot of the details and how this is going to happen in the future. So let's start with the basics. What is Greenlight Pinellas, and how did this all get started?
Well, Greenlight Pinellas is going to be on the November ballot. It is a referendum to change transit funding here in Pinellas County. Right now, transit is funded with a property tax. We took quite a hit and lost a lot of revenue, had to cut a lot of service because of the recession. And it's we're almost at our cap right now. We really don't have room to expand the service, and we're trying to do something that will allow us to build a decent transit system, one that is appropriate for our size population, because right now what we have out there is very, very small for a population of more than 900,000.
Yes. You know, that's one of the complaints I've heard people say over and over about the PSTA bus service, is the fact that it's inadequate for second shift workers in the evening. It just peels off, and then there's for people that work second shift, it's difficult to get to the point where you have bus service that you can rely on to get home from a job that's second shift. And then third shift, of course, basically there aren't a lot of bus services anywhere that run a lot, you know, on the for third shift workers. But we could still do better for second shift. What are the plans for that, to improve that service? Because that's one of the major criticisms that I've heard over the last several months as we've been discussing this.
And that is really, it's an accurate criticism. We do not support second shift workers, with the exception of the beach trolley and one or two other routes that run almost till 11:30 midnight. But we've got a lot of one-way riders. They're either going to or from, but they have to find their own way the other direction. So if this measure passes, we're looking at a 65% increase in overall bus service. And that includes a lot more service later at night, finally accommodating, for the first time in the history of Pinellas County, second shift workers. Some third shift will be able to accommodate as well. Buses running on the main corridors, 19, Gulf to Bay, others every 15 minutes, and then the supporting network, for the most part, every 30 minutes. And right now, most of our routes run every hour.
Yes, exactly. So we do need to increase the service. So if the Greenlight Pinellas initiative is approved by voters, that will increase the availability of the buses on second shift, correct? I mean, that's one of the main priorities, correct?
Well, yeah, not only increase them, but it'll actually make them available in most places for the first time.
Yes, exactly.
And I mean, we're not really supporting the economy right now because we are so small for our population. And if you pick up a newspaper, you look through the classified ads, you'll see people just specify sometimes no bus riders or must have own car, because they know if they hire someone who relies on PSTA and that person misses a bus, a lot of times they're going to be an hour late.
Yes.
They don't want to deal with that. And that, you know, our transit system just isn't supporting our economy properly.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, also, as well as increasing the bus service, we're talking about an initiative that's going to institute light rail in Pinellas County, and possibly, if Hillsborough County cooperates in another referendum, connecting to light rail service in Hillsborough County. Is that correct?
That is looking out toward the future, absolutely. The light rail in the Greenlight Pinellas plan is 10 years out. First thing you do is you increase the bus service. You build a very strong foundation of bus service, because we brought people in from all over the country who have really successful transit systems and light rail, and they all said, every single one of them said, any rail system is only as good as the supporting bus network. So we really took that to heart in the Greenlight plan. And then in the TBARTA master plan, I'm sorry, TBARTA is the Tampa Bay Area Regional Transportation Authority.
Oh, I'm glad you said that instead of me.
Make sure you call me out, because I don't want to slip into the acronyms and confuse people. But they have a regional master plan for transportation. Greenlight is part of that. It's part of the Metropolitan Planning Organization's long-range transportation plan. They're all partners. We all developed this together as one. And we've had people come down from Washington, D.C., our national legislators, telling our local leaders, we need to get on the ball when it comes to transportation, because we're the last major metropolitan area in the country without a robust transit system.
Really? Let me stop you right there for just a second and let that sink in for the listeners. Did you hear what this man just said? And the reason I like to emphasize this is because at the Pinellas County Commission hearing, where the vote was cast to put this referendum on the ballot for voters to vote on in November, I heard speaker after speaker after speaker from the public say that exact thing, is that, you know, we're the turtles of transportation here.
That,
we're behind a lot of other metropolitan areas, and it's becoming a serious issue in terms of competitiveness with retaining younger workers, because younger workers are less and less inclined to have a car because of the expense. They are more into ride sharing, and carpooling and using public transportation, such as rail, which we're going to have, and such as increased bus service, which we're going to have. And so I've seen people at the last Pinellas County Commission meeting where that vote happened, and I believe that was the 10th of December of last year. And that was a great night. It went on for a long time, and speaker after speaker after speaker, and a lot of those people whom I actually know and have worked with on political issues, because as well as being a talk show host, I'm also an activist. And I do want to disclose that I'm a supporter of the Greenlight Pinellas Initiative, and I've been very supportive of increasing transportation options here in Florida for a variety of reasons, both economic and environmental. So I want to disclose that, because I'm not only just a person that's reporting on the subject, but I'm also an advocate when it comes to these kind of issues, and I am definitely a supporter of the Greenlight Pinellas Initiative. So I remember that so starkly, just person after person after person, and the younger they were, the more they happened to mention that. I've got the video of it, and I've watched it a few times. And in fact, I remember Maria Jose, who I saw on Saturday at the People's Budget Review, where I also spoke with your boss, Brad Miller, who was also there speaking about transportation issues and other things. And she was one of the most memorable speakers. There's a young Hispanic woman. And she just said very starkly, you know, we're behind. We need to do this. She had to buy a car because the public transportation was inadequate for her needs, and that she didn't want to have to do that because she's a young mother with small children. She didn't want to have to go to the expense, but she didn't really see any alternative to that in the short term. So in the long term, I'm really hopeful that this will pass. And now, in terms of the developing this for the light rail, and also, I wanted to ask you one other question in terms of light rail. There's this proposal for this ferry in Tampa that Ed Taranchik is involved in.
Yes.
Would this connect to any of the proposed ferry terminals on the Tampa side? Where is it going to terminate in terms of the bridges? And how far could people get to the ferries if they wanted to use that on the other side, on the Tampa side possibly? It's just an idea that I thought of this evening. I thought I'd ask.
You know, I'm not as familiar with the ferry service. The presentation I saw him make to TBARTA was from, I think, Brandon over to MacDill. And that was a weekday commuter ferry service cutting across the bay and bringing people in. And then the idea he proposed at that point was, since you don't need it on the weekend or Friday nights, was to change it up and go from Brandon across to St. Petersburg in the pier area.
Yes.
Running
yes.
back and forth. Now, Or even
charters were considered, so you could have certain things happen for certain kinds of events. You could provide the service there and I guess rent the ferry for specific purposes. But yeah, so would it connect to that perhaps at a ferry terminal in St. Petersburg at the pier or whatever replaces the pier if it's not there?
We already have bus service doing that, so we would definitely have a connection. The light rail itself probably not. That's going to be a little further south. Right now the corridor starts down around the medical centers, All Children's Bayfront, goes by the Trop, and then up toward Carillon in the Gateway Carillon area, which is the real focus of that entire line, because that's the employment center of the county.
Yes,
and you'll hear
yes.
people say, well, you know, people don't want a line that's going to go from Clearwater to St. Pete. That's not really what we're putting it in for. It's to get people to and from Gateway Carillon, because that's where the demand is today. That's where the heavy traffic is today. So there's a built-in demand right now. And then you've got 16 stations along a 24-mile line, and we see it all around the country. Those stations start to draw in development, redevelopment. You get people living and working near those. Setting it up makes it a lot easier to move people around more efficiently and more cheaply in the long run with a light rail system.
Now, what about these critics? You know, a lot of these meetings, both PSTA meetings and Pinellas County Board of Commissioners meetings, I've heard this small minority of people that are persistent and very vocal critics of the fact that we don't really have enough ridership on the existing buses to justify expanding the service. Of course, that's kind of a catch-22. It's like you provide the buses, they will come, and I realize that. But what do you say to those critics that say, well, you know, I see the buses going by empty all the time, and there's even this one theory that the bus windows are tinted so you can't see the low ridership, which I think is hilarious. I mean, come on.
Really, the only thing I can say is all the evidence is to the contrary, and I encourage anyone who thinks that to get out there, not only ride, try different routes and talk. You don't even have to ride, actually. You can go to one of our terminals, Park Street, Williams Park, Grand Central. Talk with some of our drivers. Talk with some of our riders. Hear what they have to say. You're going to get a very different picture. And I can tell you, having done it myself, that every morning going into New York City off of Route 3 in New Jersey, every single bus, and it's a line several miles long, standing room only, and every single bus coming out is empty. There are times when buses are not full or have less than full loads in every transit system in the world. Ours is one of them. But for the most part, we are having trouble meeting the demand. We are putting extra buses out there throughout the day, not just at rush hour, because the ones that are out there are too full to pick up additional passengers. And that's been one of the big pushes behind Greenlight for years, because we have so many requests to increase service.
Well, yeah, and the fact is that there's a normal 24-hour daily pattern that you see in weekdays where most traffic is going towards the downtown of the major cities in the morning and then back out of the downtown in the afternoon to the suburbs. And that's just common sense. Of course, you're going to have more ridership one way or another, depending on what the time of day is. But the point is that these people are over time, over a 24-hour cycle, as you cycle through the shifts, they are going to be people riding both ways. And, you know, like we'd already discussed here, the fact that the second shift bus service is inadequate right now. People can't build that into their own routines so that they are depending on that. So we've got to really basically build it so then they can come and then start increasing the ridership. And I think you've got the numbers to prove that, because we've already discussed, I know Brad Miller's said this many times in my presence, that we've already seen increased ridership, especially since the recession hit. So that's only going to become more important in terms of the economy, but also in terms of the environment. We've got to reduce greenhouse gases. We've got to reduce the load on the roads and use the transportation fuels we have much more efficiently with high occupancy vehicles. So, my next question would be, what specifically do you say to these people that we shouldn't spend the money for this kind of infrastructure and that we just absolutely will not have the ridership? Because these people are just very adamant on that point. And they, anytime you mention anything to the contrary, they just seem like they're just so rabidly stuck to their point of view that they consider you like some kind of traitor if you advocate for transportation. I've seen it.
Let me give you the easiest answer, Mark. Just let them have their opinion, move on, because you're not going to change their mind. There are people out there who look at this and they say, well, it's subsidized, and public transit, everyone, doesn't pay for itself anywhere in the world. It is subsidized by governments and taxpayers the world over because the public and people want it. It's part of our infrastructure, mm-hmm. like roads, bridges, yes. airports, seaports, courthouses. They're all supported by subsidies. I don't think, having seen what I've seen and heard what I've heard from that handful you're talking about, you're ever going to make a dent. But we do see all-time record ridership. And they claim that, no, our ridership hasn't risen, but it's gone up 19% since 2008.
Yeah, you've got the hard facts. You've got the numbers to back this up. We know what the numbers are. So people's perceptions don't necessarily correlate with the actual hard facts of the situation. So when you see, you know, I sometimes see buses with low ridership. There'll be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, like, or 5 people in back and 1 person by the driver. You know, that usually happens in the afternoons when you've got most of the first shift workers are there, and the second shift workers, if they have access to the bus service and it does work for them, they're probably getting ready to leave, and there's that little bit of a lull in the afternoon, and that's perfectly normal because other vehicular traffic follows the same pattern. You know, it's a predictable mm-hmm. pattern, that 24-hour cycle Monday through Friday. So you've got the numbers to prove that we need this service, and frankly, I am getting very frustrated with the Bay Bridges, Amy. Just, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And over and over and over, I'm getting stuck in the bridges, and it takes two or three times as long as it would to be normally drive it to get across the bridges. And this has happened to me frequently, over and over, even recently. Like on the last day of the Renaissance Festival, which is two Sundays ago, we got to the Renaissance Festival, and we were okay because we left pretty late in the day, but we heard person after person speaking at the Renaissance Festival in Tampa about the fact they got stuck on the Bay Bridges, Howard Franklin Bridge, for example, for 2 hours.
I think that was during that construction
mess
up there. Yeah,
exactly. That was terrible.
And you know, part of this plan, we already have cross bay routes, but they're specially funded by the state only for weekday commuters. If this funding change happens, we're going to have weekend night service. It's going to be express service. Express means fewer stops, so it's a faster end-to-end travel time. And we use the Greyhound style buses, so you have reclining seats, reading lights, you can plug in your laptop, and actually by this summer all of our buses will have Wi-Fi as well. We already have about 20 of them out there.
Oh, that's great, because I'd love to do that. Anytime I go to Tampa, I would like to take an express bus or light rail, especially to the airport, but other places, you know, in or near downtown Tampa as well. I just like to dump the car. This last week, I went up to Tallahassee on Tuesday with the Interfaith Coalition. They were working on the juvenile justice reform that we covered earlier.
Heard you talking about that.
Yeah. And we took this beautiful tour bus. I was able to work all the way up and all the way back. I didn't have to drive. And usually I'm the driver wherever I'm going, unless I'm on a tour bus like that. And it's great. I can use my laptop computer. I can even use my cellular telephone, because cellular service is pretty consistent on the freeways, just about anywhere in the country now. And that just really increases productivity. You know, I remember the author Scott Turow, and I don't remember the title of the book that he wrote, but he wrote a bestseller, and he wrote it on the subway to and from work, this guy. And this was up in the New York City area. And I thought, you know, I want to be that productive. I want to make $1 million with my spare time. You know, I would like to do that. I would love to be able to go across the bay, just plunk myself down on light rail or an express bus and just get work done and then get there and not have to deal with it. You know, the driving and everything. I think it'd be much better.
I want to know how he did it, because I only got a seat on the subway about 10% of the time. I was standing the rest of the time.
I don't know. Maybe he was versed in martial arts or something. I don't know. But that's the story. Anyway, for some reason, that story about Scott Turow, that author, has always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. How you can get work done and not have to drive and reduce your costs and congestion on the roads at the same time. That's just a win-win-win all the way around, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we want you to text all you want, but let us do the driving. Because
this
texting and driving is getting out of hand. Now, here's some fun trivia for you. We've been running those coach buses across the Howard Franklin to Gandy Bridge since I've been at PSD since 2005, a little before then. And they have the electric plugs. What do you think is the number one use for those electric AC plugs on the bus? Give a guess.
Electric AC plugs?
Yeah. To plug something in. Laptop.
Well, it's either going to be a cellular telephone charger or a laptop, AC for a laptop, I think.
That was my first guess. It was either that, or I figured maybe an electric razor.
And electric razor. I hadn't thought of that one.
That might do it. Not even close. And drivers tell me that far and away, it's hair curlers.
Oh, my gosh. I would have never guessed
me
that.
Me neither. I get a kick out of it, especially because that's the last thing I need. I wish I had need for a hair curler, and I'm willing to learn, but no, I get a kick out of it. But, I mean, you can.
Really?
That's the kind of thing you can do. You can sleep, read, work. Why not take advantage of the extra time?
Well, yeah. You know, I never thought of that from the female point of view. Being a male, I think, in terms of being male, but, you know, every once in a great while, and it's very rare, but every once in a while, I see a woman trying to put on makeup while she's driving, and I think, you know, it would be nice if they didn't have to do that. And if you want to curl your hair, too, that's fine. You know, you can do your, you know, personal hygiene routine, your cosmetics and hairstyling right there and not have to drive. That'd be a, you know, better use of the time than being stuck in traffic. So I'm going to remember that one. That's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's a fun one.
Interesting. Got any other interesting facts for us like that?
Not quite as much fun. Let me think. No, but I can tell you one of the things that surprised me that I learned a few years ago. I was going out to do some charity events on the beach early on a Saturday with my daughter, and I got out there and I was at the Park Street Terminal, which is downtown Clearwater, waiting for the trolley, and it was packed. It was 7:20. It was a 7:20 departure. And all of these people were waiting to get on this trial.
Let me ask you a question. Where is that terminal?
It's just one block east of Fort Harrison, not far, about two blocks away from the courthouse downtown Clearwater. There is a little street there called Park Street, and people get it confused with the other Park Street in Pinellas County.
Exactly. It's towards the Intracoastal a block or two, isn't it? To the west? Yeah, okay. I know where it is. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's a good question because, and you can always Google it, but I saw all these people there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we're all boarding the trolley. I think about four of us were non-workers, and they were literally shoving on at the end like a Tokyo subway. The people were pushing on, and then they were aligning themselves inside. They knew who was getting off where. And I had a woman – I'm looking at my daughter. I guess she was about 9 at the time, and there's a woman sitting down. She goes, here, put her on my lap, because there wasn't even enough room for my daughter to stand. And I remember when we were going up over the bridge, you could hear the engine straining going over the Memorial Causeway Bridge because we had such a load.
Well, yeah, it's so much higher than it used to be, too.
And I figured, okay, something's going on. It's spring break. I don't know. So I went the next four out of the five weekends, and I took some video, and I've got video of it as well. And it's like that every Saturday. These are people going out there for their jobs and to work. And I had no idea. On Saturday, yeah.
There's that much demand for bus service for actual workers and not just tourists or beachgoers at that time of day on a Saturday?
Yep. In fact, it was a week before Halloween this past year. I was working out there setting up a conference. Came back at 4:20 on a Saturday. I was across from Pier 60. There were 34 people at my stop, and there were only two or three on beachgoers. The rest were workers. And that bus only has 32 seats.
Okay, well, Bob, does it for the time that we've got for the interview this time. I'm going to have you come back because I've got so many more questions to answer, and we've only got about a minute or so to wrap up the program. And, yeah, we just scratched the surface here, and it was a good scratch. We got a real good start on this, and I'm so glad. So listen next week for more Spectrum 360. I'm going to have Bob on again sometime soon, and we'll discuss more transportation issues and a lot of other things as well. We'll see you next week on Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks. We can make it happen. We can.